Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This episode of Politics Without the Boring Bits is sponsored by BT, because BT means business. BT knows that businesses come in many shapes, sizes, and guises, from the person just starting out at their kitchen table to the biggest employer, which is why no matter what line of work you're in, they've got your back to help you succeed and do what you do best. No doubt connectivity is a must in Westminster, and it certainly helped us to get this episode created and distributed to you listening right now. BT already connects more than 1 million businesses and public sector organisations, offering secure and reliable connectivity. Nearly three quarters of people running a business or side hustle feel they couldn't do so without reliable broadband and mobile connectivity. That's why having connectivity you can count on is a must for business, whether it be facilitating multiple devices being connected at once or making team calls or guest Wi-Fi access for customers. BT's connectivity helps keep you and your customers happy. Whatever your business, BT's got your back. Search BT's got your back.
Hello, this is the Red Box Podcast. I'm Matt Chorley. Coming up on today's episode, no PMQs unpacked, because MPs aren't there. So we've got PMQs packed up. Patrick McGuire and I take a look back over a year of PMQs, the highs, mostly lows, of the regular clashes between Keir Starmer and Boris Johnson. So that's coming up in just a moment. As first as ever, we kick off with our columnist panel. It's Alice Thompson and Robert Crampton. Now, I normally introduce you as a crampon, but for some time now, Alice has been raising questions about that as a name. But here is a gift for you. We're talking Christmas gifts. Here's a gift for you. James has been in touch saying, thank you for such a reliably entertaining and informative Red Box podcast. I mean, it's not for me to read out praise. He goes on, a suggestion for a better portmanteau for Robert Crampton and Alice Thompson. How about Alibert? Alibert.
I think that sounds like an upmarket fish, actually. That's
yeah.
Quite... Do you think?
Yeah, I like
well,
it.
Well, that's all right.
Anything's better than
Alice
crampon.
Alice is upmarket and Robert's a bit fishy. Put it together. Alibert, so Alibert it is then. Alibert it is then. We'll get the jingle made up for in the new year. Very good. Well, thank you for that, James. And thank you for listening to the podcast or however you listen to us. Right, let's talk about Boris Johnson.
Oh, right.
Some really interesting polling today. Some new YouGov poll for The Times. They do every week for us, I think it is. Which shows that Boris Johnson's polling is back to where it was in the depths of 2019 when he... prorogued Parliament. The Tories are at their lowest level since then.
Uh-huh.
Some of his personal ratings now are on a par with Theresa May in the week or two before she was ousted from number 10. Although our colleague Danny Finkelstein has written in The Times today about how it's quite difficult to remove Boris Johnson. So are they just stuck with him, Alice?
Well, actually, I thought Danny's was a really interesting piece because he talked about how, you know, only Theresa May and Margaret Thatcher had ever been pushed out by the Tories. But on the other hand, they are quite recent. And I think the Tories have got more and more ruthless. And they've pushed out quite a lot of people who were leaders but never became prime ministers. Mm. And if they think they're not going to win and if they think their seats are going to go, they will just get rid of him. And that's how they operate. And that's why they've been so successful in many ways. They absolutely want to win beyond anything else, the Tories. Much more, I've always thought, than Labour. So if they think that Boris Johnson's going to lose in their seat, he will go in the next year. And that's how it will be. It won't be any more, you know, the wine and cheese and all that will be only if it threatens their seat. So it's not playing in their constituencies. They won't care. And so it's not really for him. It's not an ideological issue. It's much more of an issue of how it's playing out in the Tory party. And I think he's been quite clever trying to wrap round people like Rishi Sunak and Liz Truss. But I think... actually, in the end, it's going to be what the backbenchers think of him. And they don't think, also what Danny says, but doesn't actually think is a problem, but it's, you can actually be anonymous when you put in your vote of no confidence in the Prime Minister. And that's much more dodgy in the Tory party, because if you're anonymous, as we all know, it's much, much easier to say things than if you've got to come up and fess up and say that you don't like someone.
Although Danny does make the point that you could get the 55 anonymous letters, but that isn't the same as saying that he'd actually lose a no confidence vote.
Which is what happened to it. Which is what happened to Theresa May.
Yeah, which is
for no confidence vote.
Yeah.
Three years ago, Christmas. It was just in the run up to Christmas, wasn't it?
And he advances various persuasive arguments, I think, as to why Johnson might win it, even though there isn't actually any confidence in him. He might not lose a vote of no confidence.
And you might do okay with the virus. I mean, if we get sort of booster campaigns worked, and if the virus, the new Omicron recedes, he might get some of the benefit from that, which is rather extraordinary in a way. But, you know, he is very much tied in now to the whole pandemic. And so that will change. But, I mean, the fact that we've got a stop on Christmas means that they can't plot anymore, the MPs in Parliament. They'll all be going back home, and then they'll get involved in the Christmas kind of non...
Yeah.
What are we going to do?
Yeah, he was limping along to Christmas, and it looks like he's kind of just about got there. But I think what you were saying about the cheese and wine playing in the constituencies, I mean, obviously we saw in Shropshire that it is doing. And, yeah, I mean, it's weird, isn't it? I mean, politicians are usually brought low by sex or drugs, but cheese boards.
Cheese.
I mean, the man's a slave to a cheese board.
Yeah.
I mean,
I think he probably got COVID so bad because he had too much cheese too.
Well, he said that when he said he was 16 and a half stone or whatever, and he admitted to being overweight. And the main cause, I think, was a cheese board. And I mean, I thought wine and cheese was very much a 70s thing. It's obviously made a comeback. And Boris is more or less fueled it.
I have many differences with the Prime Minister, but I'm not going to criticise him for enjoying
it's really
cheese
nice.
Board.
Yeah.
You can't see Boris with cottage cheese, can you? It's got to be the full on. I mean, I can't quite see him cutting back. Yeah.
And it's a full wheel of brie.
Oh, absolutely.
Groaning
with cheese, groaning and crackers.
What about, because I know particularly in the run-up to the 2019 election, you spent time going around what was the red wall and large parts of it then became the blue wall.
Yeah.
And obviously a sort of knock-on consequence of the last 2 years and the pandemic has meant that those, 109 new Tory MPs haven't been bound into, as we've seen, things like just vote the way you tell you, William.
No, 26 of them rebelled last week, didn't they, I think.
And all of that.
Yeah.
And so, and another thing they've probably not been bound into is you don't change your leader in the middle of all of it. You know, I just think that the grip that Number 10 has, schooling this, I mean, they make up, a third of the parliamentary party, schooling this new bunch of MPs in, this is how we do things.
Yes.
They're
Bolshevik Northerners.
Exactly. But midterm blues is a normal thing, but they've never experienced that before. Getting a load of grief for stuff they haven't done is a new thing. Yeah. Voting for stuff they don't agree with is a new thing.
Yeah.
And so maybe sticking in a letter of no confidence might be a new thing that they might want to try. I just think conventions don't hold.
Yeah, and as Alice points out, as Danny says, there's only been two out of 24 prime ministers since 1900 forced out whilst in office. One was in 1990 and one was 3 years ago, 2 years ago. Or 3 years ago, I can't remember, Theresa May. So it might be that, just as our attention spans are supposedly getting shorter, people are more, like you say, they're new people, and they're more prepared to do things that wouldn't normally be done. I think that's a good point. They might well go for it, but as returning to Danny's point, there are compelling reasons, not least the timing and the nature of coups and how the risk is, the reward is spread evenly, but the risk is borne by the plotters, which militate against successful coups.
And do you think it requires, Alice, somebody to senior to sort of wield the knife? Do we need a... Who is the Heseltine? We got in a pickle earlier in the week when we were talking about who is the John Redwood, because as somebody pointed out, those rules don't apply anymore for put up or shut up. But is there a Heseltine? Do we need
a Heseltine? Well, that's the problem, because Heseltine's just never made it. So quite a lot of the ones we know, like Michael Portillo or Heseltine or anyone who put in. I mean, in those days, God, it was the landlines, wasn't it, that went in. so that you knew that they were plotting. I think now that people do still worry about that. They don't want to be the one that says it.
He who wields the axe doesn't get to wear the crown or something.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. So that's their nervousness. So I think that's what may prevent them from doing it. On the other hand, I now look at them and think, you know, people like Rishi Sunak is definitely marshalling his, you know, troops, as Truss, as, you know, I mean, quite a few of them now really do think they may have a chance, Jeremy Hunt. And that does become more and more dangerous, because once all the conversation turns to who are we going to back, you begin to lose the plot, really. And then it just all unravels that, you know, they're not focusing on you anymore. And I think that is an issue, actually.
But who knows? January might bring some good news with the pandemic, and then it's all changes again.
Go again.
Yeah. I mean, you don't know, do you? I mean, I don't know, I didn't hear all of the Blair thing. I heard a bit of it in the lift coming up to the studio. And he was basically saying, the one thing that this pandemic's taught us is that all bets are off. You can't plan ahead. So it's possible that if we get through the next couple of weeks and things start to pick up, I mean, and the wave isn't as bad as we think, then
Boris gets the credit.
Johnson, well, right, or just gets the benefit, not necessarily the credit, but gets the benefit of people feeling a bit more optimistic. Maybe.
Well, we'll see. Possibly. We'll see how that pans out. I want to talk to you about offence, not because I want to cause you any offence.
No.
But there were two things in the paper today about offence. Priti Patel's going to warn police to do more to protect freedom of speech after judges ruled that recording non-crime hate incidents risked interfering with people's right to express their opinions. And then on the show, in fact, it's on the show tomorrow, but for reasons, the story ran in the Times today, which is why we're talking about it. But on the show tomorrow, we're going to hear from Armando Iannucci, obviously creator of The Thick of It and Veep and all of that. And I asked him about this idea of, you know, people being constantly offended. Let's take a listen.
With each project, I stop telling myself, where is the line? You know, where do you feel you're stepping over the mark? And every now and then do it anyway, just to see what happens. But I don't write anything setting out to annoy people or offend people. I just, you know, my sense of what personally I find funny tends to circulate around either embarrassment or awkwardness. I also do think, what's wrong with being offended? You know, it's good to be offended, because it tests your own beliefs.
There we are. Alison Roberts, is it good to be offended?
Well, my view is actually the police are spending way too much time having to do this. And that I think actually the bit I like about Priti Patel's point is that we don't need the police to police us. We should be doing this ourselves. And as Armando said, actually, you know, people are going to step out of line every now and again. And it's, in a kind of way, it's quite teenagery, although they're the ones sort of monitoring everyone. It's that sense of, how far can I push it? So I find now that it's my friends who are slightly pushing it and my children who are going, watch it.
Yes.
And I find that really weird that they're going, and even with COVID, they're like sticking rigorously to the 10 days, don't leave their bedroom. And then it's the older generation who are just like, oh God, I'm not sure I can face doing a lateral flow, because then I'll know if I've got COVID or not. And I'm like, really? And so I think there is that weirdness. Isn't it?
What
when
about you,
it's definitely the younger generation.
I think the guy, is it Henry Miller, who's from he's my part of the world in East Yorkshire, the guy who brought the case, put it very well. It should not ever be an offence to be offensive. That's what he said outside the appeal court. And he's right. I mean, whatever you say about the nature of offence, it's not a police matter, is it? We can talk all day about people, what offends people and whether it's good to be offended. I mean, obviously, if you just say to somebody, you're fat and ugly, that is not very nice, and it's not good for them in any way. In another sense, to say, I disagree with your opinion and I think you're an idiot, is fine. And that tests your opinions. But it's not it's not for the police to say. The fact that the youngsters, I mean, I'll take Alice's point, are much more wary of following the rules and so on, is a rather sad thing, and shows the dangers of living in a society where somebody's... I mean, the idea that
I'm going to have to offend you and interrupt you, I'm
fine,
afraid,
because
we've run out of time.
Oh, no.
There's no offence intended. Please
no
don't
problem.
Arrest me.
I won't bear it again. I won't hold it against you for more than a couple of decades.
Robert Crampton, Alice Thompson, then, of course, you can read them in The Times every week. Just get yourself a subscription. Go to thetimes.co.uk/timeslash box. Next, though, it's PMQs Packed Up.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices
down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You're listening to the Red Box Podcast now. It's time for this.
PMQs Unpacked on Times Radio. Unpacking the politics and cutting through the crossfire.
Order, order. I call Matt Chorley and Patrick Maguire.
Yes, so no actual PMQs today because all the MPs are on their Christmas recess and they've not been recalled to vote on a lockdown. So what we thought we'd do instead is PMQs packed up. Patrick Maguire, Times Red Box Editor's here. Hiya, Patrick.
Good afternoon, Matt. How are you? Merry Christmas.
I'm all right. Merry Christmas to you too. We are going to try and look for the highlights of PMQs over the last year. If anyone can think of one and wants to get in touch, do get in touch in the usual way. Text me 8722, start your message the word Times. You can tweet me at Times Radio. If any particularly memorable bits of PMQs from this year. Patrick, let's just get stuck into some of the bits that we've picked out of just things what happened, highlights or lowlights, others can decide. But one of the things that, once again, we definitely didn't expect to be here this time last Christmas, was the fact that for large parts of this year, we've still been having Christmas PMQs via Zoom. Maybe we'll be back there by the new year too. And that you tend to end up with some technical difficulties. This was what happened back in July when Sajid Javid got COVID. For about 10 seconds, Boris Johnson and Rishi Sunak tried to get out of going into isolation using some special scheme before realising actually they couldn't do that. Boris Johnson ends up having to do PMQs over Zoom, and it didn't go very well.
Simultaneously, Mr. Speaker, attack.
Sorry, Prime Minister. Prime Minister, just a moment. We're really struggling on the sound level. I don't know whether we can actually have the sound level turned up to hear the Prime Minister.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay. Thank you, Prime Minister. Otherwise, you've got a great standing who's quite desperate. But I want to hear this, Prime Minister.
Hi, Albert. Do you want me to have another go, Mr. Speaker? Hang on a minute. Is it this thing here?
Sir, I want to quite well. People were decided to be quite rowdy, but I can hear you now. Continue halfway through.
Can you hear me, Mr. Speaker?
And on it went, Patrick McGuire. There was then a bit of a row, wasn't there, as to whether or not it was the Prime Minister's end or Parliament's end. I suppose it's just a reminder that when we come to judge this year in PMQs, it's not been a normal year.
No, it's been every possible way it's imaginable for parliamentary proceedings to be disrupted by COVID, i.e. people getting COVID, people getting pinged, the classic Zoom pitfall of, people being on mute, people turning up basically dressed in their pyjamas, have thrown the PMQs we know and love off kilter in quite a profound way. And, you know, it's easy to laugh. That exchange is very funny. But in that sort of little vignette there, you can see why the government was so keen to knock virtual proceedings on the head, because it just is no, as particularly in the sort of in the dog days of the pandemic towards the end of summer 2021, you know, it's no substitute for you know, the cut and thrust of in-person proceedings.
Talking of pyjamas, obviously one of the things that did happen this year back in September was when Lindsay Hoyle issued rules on what MPs could and couldn't wear. No jacket and chinos, no sportswear, large handbags were banned. Of course, he never actually gave a ruling on whether or not you could take your baby into the House of Commons, a separate point altogether. But it just feels like the whole of the House of Commons have been slightly struggling with post-lockdown life.
Decorum, yeah. Well, as we all have. But I think, and it's interesting, I mean, later on I know we're going to discuss an aspect of Lindsay Hall's personality that has rather more in common with his predecessor than he would perhaps like to admit. But that's an indication of Lindsay Hall's personality and principles as Speaker. You know, one of Bercow's rulings, of course, remember, for most of your career in the press gallery and the early years of my career in the press gallery, you couldn't go in without wearing a tie. So you would have, you know, if you didn't turn up with a tie, you'd have to pick off the hat stand outside the entrance to the press gallery any number of garish kipper ties that people's dead uncles had donated. And then Bercow in 2017 lifted that rule that's since been sort of retightened by Lindsay Hoyle. So yeah, yeah. It's another sign of how a speaker and the personality of the speaker has, you know, can really shape our perceptions of Parliament and how business is done in the chamber.
One of the other impacts of coronavirus restrictions, of course, is up until the autumn, they couldn't have loads of people in the House of Commons. And it's been, you know, it's not an original observation, but Boris Johnson likes to perform. And when he's up again, you know, but he doesn't have that. And actually, Keir Starmer, I think, has started enjoying it in the latter parts of the year, has started enjoying himself a bit more with a bit of a swell of support behind. But let's go right the way back to January. You can hear that this is both Keir Starmer and Boris Johnson in an empty Commons chamber. Boris Johnson really, you know, doing all of his usual catchphrases, which we'll discuss in a moment, but with no response behind. And watching the clip, he's really looking around to see if there's anyone there, and there just isn't. Let's take a listen.
Last night, the Home Secretary told a Conservative Party event that, and these were her words, on should we have closed our borders earlier? The answer is yes. I was an advocate, says the Home Secretary, of closing them last March. Why did the Prime Minister overrule the Home Secretary?
Mr. Speaker, I think it was last March that the Right Honourable Gentleman, along with many others, was actually saying that we didn't need to close borders. But as usual, Captain Hindsight has changed his tune to suit events. We are facing, and it's interesting that his first few questions were about a computer glitch in the Home Office, Mr. Speaker, which we're trying to rectify. We're in the middle of a national pandemic, and and this country is facing a very, very grave death toll. And we are doing everything we can to protect the British public, which is, I think, what he would expect. And that's why we've instituted one of the toughest border regimes in the world. That's why we insist that you have to get a test 72 hours before you fly. There must be a passenger locator form, which you have to provide, Mr. Speaker, and then you must quarantine for 10 days or 5 days if you do a second test. And I'm delighted that he now praises the Home Secretary. In fact, a change of tune from the Right Honourable gentlemen, and I'm delighted that he's now in favour of tough border controls, because he wasn't last year, Mr. Speaker, and indeed he campaigned for the leadership of the Labour Party on a manifesto to get back to free movement, Mr. Speaker.
Yeah, I mean, two people saying yeah, yeah, it does not a rousing swell of support, mate. I'd forgotten about the whole business of all that. The computer glitch, as Boris Johnson called it, was when the Home Office managed to lose 400,000 criminal records after a computer glitch on the police computer system, which I think is the same system has got massively, the replacement for it is massively overrun. But just a reminder there, Patrick McGuire, just the sound of two people having an argument with raised voices in an otherwise sort of empty pub.
Yeah, there's a real flatness about those exchanges, isn't there? But listening to that, you know, obviously that was a quirk of circumstance, that those exchanges were always going to be flat and unsatisfying, and neither of them, particularly Boris Johnson, as you say, who is a, you know, more of an after dinner speaker than a prime minister, you know, we're always going to fall flat. But it makes me wonder what's more damaging for a prime minister, right? I certainly think the fact that Keir Starmer never, until very recently, until a couple of months ago, spoke in front of banks of Labour MPs cheering him on did perhaps compound in the first half of this year the sense that his leadership was faltering, that he was isolated, that Labour MPs weren't particularly enamoured with what he was doing. But I wonder what's more damaging. And I guess we'll see this when MPs return in January, given the state of Boris Johnson's leadership. Is it, as was frequently the case in the later days of Theresa May's premiership, a full Commons that isn't cheering you on? Or is it an empty Commons? And I think actually for Boris Johnson, he might find that it might be more damning, you know, than his showman act falling flat because there is no audience than having a full house or worse, a, you know, sparsely populated benches behind him because they don't want to turn up to the Boris Johnson show anymore.
Which is what we saw a couple of weeks ago in particular, wasn't it? Where at the height of Partygate and Owen Paterson Gate and other gates, there were spaces on the green benches, even though there weren't any restrictions. But let's focus on Keir Starmer then, because one of the things that we've touched on quite a lot when we do PMQs Unpacked and we sort of analyse in real time what's going on at PMQs is Keir Starmer's ability to hit the nail on the head at the end, getting the ball over the line, whatever the metaphor is that you want to use, but the sort of the peroration, the last question, to bring together a sort of series of thoughts and sort of flatten Boris Johnson, having just sort of rather than just poking him about a bit. This was from only a couple of weeks ago. The Downing Street Christmas party story was breaking, and this was Keir Starmer's last question over whether or not Boris Johnson would hand over material to the police.
That's so desperate, and even his own side can see it. Last week, the Prime Minister told us there was no party. Now he thinks there's something to investigate. The Justice Secretary thinks that the police don't investigate crimes from a year ago. Well, I ran the Crown Prosecution Service, and I can tell him that is total nonsense. Mr. Speaker, at Westminster Magistrates Court, right now, the CPS are prosecuting over a dozen breaches of COVID restrictions last December, including those Prime Minister who hosted parties. They're doing their job, enforcing the law set in Downing Street. Will the Prime Minister support the police and support the CPS by handing over everything the government knows about parties in Downing Street to the Metropolitan Police?
Prime Minister. Mr. Speaker, of course we will do that, and we will get on with the investigation by the Cabinet Secretary. And Mr. Speaker, he continually wants to play politics with this issue. We want to get on with our job of protecting this country.
And so it goes on, Patrick Garvey. How many times have you heard that? But it's interesting that as a last question from Keir Starmer, it doesn't quite hammer the point home. Like you said, he has improved a bit. He's had a bit more support from the Labour backbenchers. But do you think he's shown himself to have... Has he progressed from Director of Public Prosecutions to political street fighter?
The problem with that last question is that it was a question, right? If you remember, if you think back to any iconic PMQs moment, then that final question is seldom actually a question. It is, as you say, it's a peroration that ends on, a powerful line that sums up the line of questioning. And you're not actually, you know, the problem with that is, as so many of Keir Starmer's questions are, it is a question that demands a serious answer. I think Keir Starmer has improved. A question I hear much less from people who work with and under Keir Starmer now is, can this guy do politics? I think you've seen a marked improvement, particularly since he cleared out his office and installed people who had worked in government before under Tony Blair and Gordon Brown. And I think, I think the impact of those hires is already being seen, right? We may groan at lines like socially distanced from the truth, which is one he's been trotting out recently, or the Johnson variant, which turned out to be a rather ill-advised play on Delta in the summer. But they're both things we remember. It's that sort of turn of phrase that makes a more powerful point than six forensically crafted questions you might hear in the High Court could ever do in terms of political messaging.
And we talked about it before, but I lead my party, he follows his. It's the transformation from Stalin to Mr. Bean. Those are the things that people remember. And ultimately, they are not questions. As such, that, you know, they're sound bites which sort of sum up a bigger truth. I tell you what, let's. One of the things I want to, we should probably reflect on. We'll do this clip next. We should probably fess up ourselves a little bit, Patrick McGuire, because I think the week before they had that particular ding dong on parties, we have to admit, because politicians have to do it too, that we don't always call it right. And when the story about the Downing Street Party first broke, I think it's fair to say that we didn't think it had legs. Let's take a listen. Do you think this is going to land, this trying to go back to something that happened at a Christmas party a year ago, Patrick McGuire, when most people are thinking about their Christmas parties this year?
I mean, it's not Bernard Castle, is it? Is would be my one sentence assessment of the viability of this attack. Obviously, it's all grist to the mill in terms of the attack Keir Starmer wants to cut through in terms of the broader message he's trying to get across the electorate. But I don't think this is going to set many pulses racing down at the... Actually, I was going to say down at the Pineapple in Kentish Town. They'll love this, the Pineapple in Kentish Town, Keir Starmer's local. But, you know, in the Dog and Duck in Uxbridge, in outer London, I can't imagine many people will do anything but shrug at this, to be frank.
And actually, the thing that's come up, particularly in all the focus groups we've done for the last 18 months on Times Radio, is it, Keir Starmer's reputation is for harking back to old stuff, you know, Mr. Hindsight, and try to turn the clock back and pick fault. I mean, this is like the worst possible example of that. But maybe, you know, maybe it's all part of that, you know, one rule for them, one rule for everyone else attack.
And it certainly is. And, you know, come the inquiry, I'm sure... The stories like this, and you know, the Matt Hancock story, you know, his philandering in the Department for Health while other people were banned from hugging their relatives is of a piece with this. But you know, the merits of the story and the truth of the story, as we've discovered over the past year, doesn't have a straightforward relationship to public interest, and the public's interests are not always directly linked, are they?
That was a bit longer than I was necessarily expecting, our public humiliation, Paddy. In our defence, what I'm going to say is, when the story first broke, we didn't have the pictures, we didn't have the video of Allegra Stratton, we didn't have the photo of them in the garden eating wine and cheese, and crucially, we didn't necessarily expect the government to lie about it repeatedly, which actually, I think, gave it legs more than anything else, and certainly seems to have given enthusiasm to... current and former members of the Downing Street staff to leak more details of it. We didn't expect the Cabinet Secretary to be called in to carry out an inquiry, and then him have to recuse himself after it turned out he had a party as well. But I think it's important for us to, if we're going to criticise politicians and not always admit where they got things wrong, on this one we got it wrong. But at the time, we're not sure it had legs. And actually, to be fair, at the last PMQs last week, Keir Starmer didn't go particularly heavy on the parties. And I spoke to somebody in his team and said, well, we don't need to. Everyone in the country knows about the parties now. So we can step back from it and not bang on about it like they did with wallpaper earlier in the year.
Yeah, exactly. And look, you know, in the Dog and Duck in Uxbridge, and indeed many other Dog and Ducks in united parts of provincial Britain that I've since visited on my journey home from London. Yeah, it's, you know, my brothers keep asking me whether I was at said parties. I'm nowhere near powerful or pliant enough to be invited to any events at number 10. But God, it's all anybody is talking about. But yes, I think we can be a little, we can, you know, forgive ourselves a smidgen of complacency there. We had no idea. But, you know, people love one rule for them, one rule for everybody else.
Those stories do really resonate. Yeah, I have to say, I was at, a funeral yesterday, and I think every single person I spoke to afterwards asked me about parties and was I at them, what's going to happen to Boris Johnson and all of that. So yeah, it's definitely got cut through. Good. So Patrick, we've done Boris Johnson, we've done Keir Starmer. What about the other man, the third person in this marriage? Lindsay Hoyle. Somebody's just tweeted, Jabberwocky on Twitter says, I know PMs always wriggle out of directly answering awkward questions at PMQs, but Boris Johnson doesn't even pretend to answer the question asked. Why does the speaker never make him do so? Patrick, try to explain what the role of the speaker actually is, or should be.
Well, it is to act as an impartial referee and umpire to proceedings. It isn't necessarily to provide a running commentary on what MPs are saying. It is to facilitate debate in a literal sense, right? Where the reason MPs address each other in that slightly convoluted, my right honourable friend, in the third person rather than the direct second person form of address is because they're actually speaking through the speaker. And obviously, I think Lindsay Hall does on occasion say to the Prime Minister, you know, it's not questions to the Leader of Opposition.
Yeah.
Watch yourself. But
he can't police his actual answers, can he? Exactly. That's the thing. And I remember when I went back to Chorley for Chorley in Chorley, where Lindsay Hall's the MP, and I asked him about this. And he basically said he'd like to have the power to rule on whether or not he's answering the question or telling the truth. And he says that's just not the job. He's there to enforce the rules. And the rules are that basically, you can, as long as you're saying something, you can say pretty much anything you like.
But of course, if an MP, after PMQs, it often happens, and in John Bercow, it would then become, you know, half an hour of questions to the speaker, and MP can raise a point of order and say, oi, Lindsay, yeah, when, Michael Fabricant 15 minutes ago said this about somebody, I'm not particularly sure that was cricket, then Lindsay Hall can adjudicate. But, you know, he's not in the job of doing it in real time.
Craig's just been when you just said there was another man, I let out the Ian Blackford groan. What a relief it was the speaker. Don't worry, this is an Ian Blackford free zone. But I think it's fair to say occasionally the power that Lindsay Hoyle wields may have gone slightly to his head. This is Lindsay Hoyle in November.
Now, let's try another issue. We know that Owen Paterson was a paid lobbyist for Randox. We know that he sat in on a call between Randox and the minister responsible for handling health contracts. We know that Randox has been awarded government contracts worth almost £600 million without competition or tender. Against that backdrop, the public are concerned that taxpayers' money may have been influenced by paid lobbying. There's only one way to get to the bottom of this. A full, transparent investigation. Yay. If he votes for Labour's motion this afternoon, that investigation can start. Will he vote for it, or will he vote for another cover-up?
Prime Minister!
I'm very happy to publish all the details of the Randox contracts, which have been investigated by the National Audit Office already. We're talking of cover-ups. I'm sorry, Mr. Speaker, but we still have not heard why the Honourable Gentleman will not tell...
Prime Minister, I'm not going to be challenged. You may be the Prime Minister of this country, but in this House, I'm in charge, and we're going to cut it off. End of that. Keir Starmer.
In this House, I'm in charge, he says. Probably giving us a good excuse for you to give us your Lindsay Hall impression for one last time in 2021, Patrick McGuire.
Before West Lancashire's favourite metalwork teacher takes his enforced retirement, don't touch the lathe. I've told you once, I've told you a million times, don't touch the lathe.
As you know, because I've shared them with you, people have emailed me in this week saying how pleased they are that don't touch the lathe has become an extended thing. It's complicated, but people like it.
We've done a lot to get Lindsay Hall to debase his ancient office in the past year. I'm sure we can get him to pose in a don't touch the lathe t-shirt.
just finally then, Patrick McGuire, it hasn't always been Boris Johnson and Keir Starmer at the dispatch box. At various points we've seen Angela Rayner standing in, but then in the budget, on budget day, Keir Starmer suddenly gets struck down with COVID. So the ghost of Christmas past was plucked from obscurity and given another run-out. This was from November. Is Ed Miliband?
Unfortunately, the Leader of the Opposition is isolating, so I'm calling Ed Miliband to ask the questions on behalf of the opposition. Ed Miliband.
Thank you. Just like the old days.
Just to say, I presume you all want to get onto the budget, because all you're doing is delaying it. Ed Miliband.
I just want to reassure both sides of the House, it's one time only that I'm back.
How have the stand-ins done, Patrick? As we get to the end of the year, at various points this year, there's been doubts about the leaders. Will Boris Johnson, Keir Starmer both still be doing PMQs at the end of 2022, do you think? Or have some of the stand-ins shown themselves slightly more adept?
Keir Starmer definitely will be. Boris Johnson's long-term prognosis is as yet unclear. I think Angela Rayner and Dominic Raab has been great viewing. They are chalk and cheese in terms of, you know, you have the slightly constipated human rights lawyer and Jim Ratt and the freewheeling, punchy heiress to John Prescott. And I've really enjoyed their encounters, because Angela Rayner's role is to be empowered to say things Keir Starmer wouldn't say. Or couldn't say them. Ed Miliband, I enjoyed just because it was so surreal. and also, you know, again, it shows that experience at the dispatch box counts for something. Neither Boris Johnson or Keir Starmer have a huge amount of experience at the dispatch box. Obviously, Keir Starmer was Shadow Brexit Secretary, Boris Johnson was Foreign Secretary, but not as leaders of their parties and sort of rabble-rousing, inspiring figures.
I'll be interested to see if they do both make it to the end of the year. If they do make it to the end of the year, hopefully one of them will get a new catchphrase. There have been loads, whether it's the European Medicines Agency, vacillate and vaccinate, but there's one in particular that we've heard so many times.
Or is it just Captain Hindsight, leaping on a bandwagon and opposing a policy that he supported 2 weeks ago? No, Mr. Speaker, I think that Captain Hindsight needs to adjust his retrospectoscope because he's completely wrong. Captain Hindsight is rising rapidly up the ranks and has become general indecision, Mr. Speaker.
General indecision wasn't a bad joke. But do you think that Boris Johnson is not a man known to abandon a joke long after it's been flogged to death. Do you think he needs some new lines of attack? They both need some new lines of attack going into 2022, Patrick.
I would be very grateful if the Prime Minister or the word minestrone or vacillate, not vaccinate ever again. But you know, to make a serious point, the events of the past fortnight have shown that the Prime Minister will no longer be able to point to his pandemic response as a get-out-of-jail-free card in response to hostile questioning. So, yes, in a very literal sense, the Prime Minister is going to need something new and substantial to say to Keir Starmer when he's under attack.
Well, we'll see what happens in 2022. PMQs Unpacked will return on, what will it be, January the 7th, I think? 6th or 7th? First Wednesday back in January, and we'll pause the action to analyse in real time what happens between Boris Johnson and Keir Starmer, assuming they're both still in their positions come January. Anything could happen. But Patrick McGuire, thank you so much for all of your pausing of the action in 2021. Happy Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
And in fact, Patrick will be back. You can hear Patrick on the show on Christmas Eve as he takes part in our Politics Without the Boring quiz, the big quiz of the year. Times Radio against the Times and two politicians. We won't give anything away, Patrick, but it's fair to say you show off your insane level of nerd knowledge.
Wasted youth.
Patrick, lovely to see you. Happy Christmas. Take care. That's Patrick McGuire. Oh, I've dropped my bells now. That's Patrick McGuire there with PMQs packed up. That's all we've got time for on this episode of the Red Box Podcast. Don't forget you can listen to me live Monday to Friday, 10 till 1 on Times Radio. And we bring you the best bits here on the podcast. And if you're feeling particularly nice, why not wait and review us wherever you get your podcast from.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Manveen Rana from The Story, a daily news podcast from The Times. Join me and my co-host, Luke Jones, for a deep dive into the big stories and investigations. Plus, each month, William Hague hosts an agenda-setting interview with a key newsmaker or big thinker. That's The Story,
The Times daily podcast that brings you one remarkable story told in depth. Listen every weekday on the Times Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.